You're listening to Review Deja Vu, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Lisa Donovan.
Hello, this is Lisa Donovan, editor of the Review Magazine, and I'll be your host today. My guest is Marcy Scalera, who's the Director of Clinical Services for Community Mental Health Partnership of Southeast Michigan. That's a mouthful. Good morning, Marcy. Nice to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. Today we're going to talk about the opioid crisis. You and I talked a while back for an article in the Review, and I'd like to touch on some of the things and maybe kind of expand on them. I know this is a big concern to our members, the opioid crisis. It's in the news every day. It's affecting people, families, communities, all over Michigan, and really all over the country. And I think a lot of people maybe have a tendency to think of opioid addicts, drug addicts, are people that are homeless, derelicts, on the street. But with this crisis, that's not necessarily the case, is it?
No. In fact, there really is no difference between socioeconomic groups. It has touched people young and old. Ethnic makeup is across the board. So we really are looking at an epidemic that has crossed all populations.
Yeah, that's what makes it really scary. It's touching so many aspects of people's mm-hmm. lives. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think has led to this opioid explosion? What makes it different than other drug crises?
So I think probably the primary reason why we're in this situation is that opioids are prescribed medications for pain management. So if you've had a sports injury, or if you've had surgery, if you're going for a wisdom tooth extraction, everybody is prescribed an opiate for pain management. And it was very widely prescribed and promoted in the last, say, 20 years as the way to go for managing pain. When we really realized that these medications are for acute pain and they're highly addictive. So folks who have been prescribed medications, there is a tendency to overuse or misuse or continue to use or share your medications,
that's a problem.
So it really, and the attitude, really, we talk about perception of risk. And the attitude is, these are prescribed medications. They came from my doctor.
And we tend to trust our doctor, right.
And we tend to trust our doctors. And so what we have is folks using a medication that's highly addictive. And when you use them for a period of time, it becomes part of your biological sort of makeup in your brain. And your brain then sort of requires the medication, which is why some people go through withdrawal symptoms when mm-hmm. they stop, or they have cravings if they've been using the medication for long periods of time. And so we've kind of gotten into the situation where we have a vast majority of folks who really unknowingly became addicted to the medication.
Yeah, that's scary. It's affecting so many people in the state and in the country. Do you have some numbers that you can kind of give us to give us a little bit of a picture of the crisis?
Yeah. So one of the numbers that I like to quote is the comparison between the number of deaths from opiates on a monthly basis versus how many people died in the 9/11 attack on the United
wow.
States.
Yeah.
So we look at there was about 5,700 people that died in New York from the 9/11 attacks. And we look at, on an average, we're looking at about 5,000 a month, give or take every month. And so if you can imagine, if we were attacked on a monthly
every single month
and lost that many lives, it would be very alarming.
That'd be front page news every single day.
And so we, unfortunately, because of the population, and we really have that myth that folks that are dying from overdoses are the low-income, poverty-stricken, mm-hmm. Back community members, that we don't realize that this is something that just is spread across the entire population.
It's so spread out. It's not the one place boom activity that the 9/11 was.
Exactly.
So it's not as noticeable. Exactly. Yeah, it's spread out.
So we are losing so many lives since this epidemic that it has really been on the forefront for many communities, as well as politicians, legislators, and the like. It has finally been looked at as, gee, we better do something about this because we're losing our population. And I think I might have told you before, but one of the statistics that I heard is that the life expectancy has actually gone down, has lowered from where it had been. And I don't have the exact numbers, but just imagine there are so many people dying from this epidemic that it's actually impacted the United States
life. Average life expectancy? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is big.
So...
Our members are primarily local governments, and I know they're highly affected by this as well. Workforce issues, manpower issues dealing with these crises, financial costs as well. What kind of problems are you seeing with local governments? And
so one of the things that I think is really important to note is that we have the impact on law enforcement is significant because law enforcement, first responders, because we have so many overdoses occurring in the community that we really had to take some additional action to help those folks, law enforcement, first responders, be able to manage the crisis. In the past, say, 4 years or so, we have been supplying local police departments, sheriff's office, state police with Narcan, which is an overdose reversal drug.
And it's quite expensive, isn't it?
Well, it can be. There are there is one type of medication that can be upwards of actually over $2,000.
Wow.
It was over $2,000 a
for
dose.
For one dose, wow.
And that's the form that's actually in the EpiPen. It's like mm-hmm. an EpiPen. Mm-hmm. It's an auto-injector, and it's very easy to use. It's great for families who really don't want to have to think about what they're doing when they rescue someone, but it is quite expensive. We use a medication called Narcan nasal spray, and it is, luckily for us, we're able to get it at a government discounted rate, so we are able to have some savings. But that, for the regular individual going to the pharmacy and getting it, it's about $150 to $200, which mm-hmm. is not cheap either.
No.
That's what we have been funding for our law enforcement department. So it's training on how to administer the medication, how to recognize an overdose, what to do in terms of administering them, what to do with the individual after they are revived. These folks are primarily going to the emergency rooms. It's caused us to really rethink how we interface with the emergency departments so that we can provide some follow-up and connection to treatment for these individuals. But it is time-consuming from the purpose of training and making sure that your police departments and first responders, fire departments, EMS, those folks are aware of the overdose protocols, and so we're trying to ensure that that's something that happens in every community. So that really is an impact on actual budget in the municipal budgets. There's also just the impact of having folks that are in an overdose situation in the community, in the street, in the library, in the grocery store, at the at the mall.
It can happen anywhere.
It can happen anywhere. What we have experienced here in Washtenaw County in our library, we've had several folks overdose in the bathrooms.
Oh, wow.
So that really caused the library to really rethink how do they sort of have their bathroom set up. They had to take certain doors off and
redesign the building.
Yeah, redesign so that somebody can't just hide in the bathroom, use, and then, you know, have an overdose, or even just the exposure for children.
Right.
We've had overdoses in the schools. We've had to train the school nurses on rescue techniques and supply the schools with having an emergency kit there.
Have community members who wouldn't expect to be dealing with this problem, library staff and things like that,
right,
really having to step up and learn how to deal with this crisis.
Yes, and how to recognize it. And not only just to, you know, actually deal with it, but also there's a whole emotional component to that as well. Having an understanding of addiction and what is this epidemic all about, and is this, you know, kind of dealing with the stigma that comes with this and helping to reduce stigma against the individuals that are addicted. Another population that we've had to do some training with are caretakers. So we have elderly individuals who are also on opiate medications, obviously for like hip replacements or whatever. And we've had to train families on recognizing overdose because, believe it or not, we have many of our elderly population actually addicted to the opiates, whether they recognize it or not, and whether we sort of look at it from that perspective, we do have so many folks that are on pain medication that they cannot stop without assistance, and you know, they continue to need that pain management to function normally. And the other interesting thing about pain management is when these medications are prescribed for long periods of time, they are not as effective as originally thought. So they're great for very short term, like you break your arm, you get a couple of days worth of medication, have a tooth pulled a few days. That's when you come out of surgery.
It's
you know, 5-10 days, whatever. Once you go beyond that, they're not as effective in pain management. So,
but you've launched into the addiction phase, right?
Yeah. Sometimes it can take as little as a straight 2-week medication regimen to become dependent on the medication,
or become, and that can affect you for weeks, months, years afterwards.
Yeah. So.
It's so widespread, as you're saying, and affecting so many different groups of individuals and in so many different locations. What are some of the steps that we can take to try to get a handle on this problem?
So there's a variety of things that are being done right now. The first and foremost is there's a lot of research coming out of the universities for prescribing practices, educating physicians on appropriate ways to prescribe the medication. There's also educating communities, families, providing information about what the opiate problem is all about, how to recognize it, what to do
Be aware of it, trying to get a handle on it before it gets too far gone.
So we want to provide a lot of education for the communities. We'd like to be able to bring folks together to have conversations. We've had a few conversations through our schools across the county here in Washtenaw County and other counties in our region that really opens a conversation, a dialogue, helping people understand the seriousness of the epidemic and trying to get folks involved in learning about it, being able to take action themselves, get trained on managing an overdose, just learning about the medication. Families who have patients who are on these medications also being trained on Narcan and the overdose protocols. There's also some newer techniques of co-prescribing. So if somebody goes out of the hospital on surgery meds, they're also prescribed the Narcan and taught how to use it. So that's now another trend.
So they can use it on themselves if they feel
overdose. Or their family members, If you're going to be in an overdose situation,
you're probably not able to do it to yourself.
It causes respiratory arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's really, really important to have somebody trained, know what to do, and you know, in an emergency situation. Let's see, what else are we doing?
So lots of education.
Lots of education. looking at the ways that we're prescribing practices, how things are managed in the emergency rooms and regular primary care.
When we talked last time, you talked about doctors prescribing these medications and kind of how they've been educated that how they work. They've kind of been told that they're not addictive. It kind of starts at a little bit higher level sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. I think that part of the sort of buildup of this epidemic came from the influx of these pain management medications and the belief that we should treat the pain first. And really under the sort of belief that these medications, if you're treating pain, are not addictive, that sort of came out of the pharmaceutical companies because mm-hmm. they were into selling the medication.
Right, and right.
So there were some not so valid points that they were making, if you will. And so we had changed the whole healthcare system in response to managing pain. The Joint Commission, which is the accreditation body for most hospitals, created a thing called the fifth vital sign, which, you know, your vital signs are, you know, your heart rate and breathing and pulse and that kind of thing. But the fifth vital sign is how much pain are you experiencing? And so we were trained to manage pain. And we really didn't think about the consequences of that until we're
just
really
take care
sort
of the pain
of
right now.
Take care of the pain right now. So really what we need to do is have more opportunities for alternative ways of managing pain. So exercise, massage, physical therapy.
After you've gotten the initial pain under control.
Right, yeah. after you manage the initial pain, and then really working on, you know, more alternative ways of managing that pain. So helping patients think differently about it. Because really what happens is as you are on these medications longer and longer, they become more irritant to your system, and so
you think they're helping, but they're really doing the opposite.
They're really doing the opposite. And I can speak to a family member who had an elderly woman who had both her hips replaced.
Wow.
And she has been on these pain medications for 4 years.
Wow.
And cannot stop taking them because of the withdrawal symptoms. But not only that, asking more and more for more medication because it's not managing her pain. So she still experienced severe pain, yet the medications aren't helping, yet she can't stop the medication. And we see this over and over.
So it's a vicious cycle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing we didn't talk about is how is the opiate epidemic related to heroin use? Because that is another huge problem for our municipalities mm-hmm. because we have seen just an incredible influx of heroin and fentanyl, which is another very strong opiate medication, and then even carfentanil, which is a elephant tranquilizer.
Wow.
That has been put out on the streets in either heroin or told mixed with it or even substituted for it. The reason why many of these individuals have moved from the prescription medication to heroin is because heroin is so much cheaper. And so what we find is that if you are not able to actually get your medications from your doctor, so
they're not going to fill your prescriptions anymore.
So you start buying it from somebody on the street.
Oh.
And it's very expensive on the street, the actual pain medications. So whoever you're buying it from suggests, well, maybe you should just try
cheaper alternative.
This is much cheaper. And then we get people snorting it. And then because they're snorting it, they think, oh, it's not as bad as injecting it. Well, it is because it's
still
the
going
same,
in your body.
Still
yeah.
going in your body. So then we have that whole aspect of it. So we now have people who have converted to using heroin. Heroin is not, obviously, it's not regulated, so you don't know how much you're getting.
Could be mixed with anything,
Could be mixed with anything. So then you have the higher possibility of overdose. And if somebody's trying to cut back, or say they've been in jail and they go back out to the community and they use the same amount of heroin that they were using before, that is a high risk for overdose.
Wow. Oh, that's scary. That's really scary. Yeah. So now that we know how widespread this problem is, how dangerous, how scary it is, what are some of the programs you're seeing going on in the Washtenaw County area, Southeast Michigan, where you work with a lot of different communities dealing
right,
with this?
Right. So we've really tackled this from a multi-layered approach. We have prevention programs that are focusing on prescription drug abuse as well as heroin use. So those are programs that are actually evidence-based practices that we use in the schools. So we provide some information, education, resistance.
How early do you start in the schools? What grade level?
So we actually are in the middle schools and mm-hmm. the high schools. We have programs that are designed for those age groups that can help them really rethink think about their potential attitudes towards drug use. We really look at perception of use, because when we think about it, you know, the whole concept of, oh, gee, it's a medication from the doctor, it's safe.
Right.
Well, we have to really sort of change that
yes,
attitude.
Yes, but maybe not.
Yeah. We also educate folks on building strengthening their skills and reducing risk factors, those kinds of things, family inclusion, helping educate parents, those kinds of things, healthy activities. So there's a lot of that kind of work going mm-hmm. on in the schools. We also
kind of preventative activities,
right? More prevention, yes. And prevention is a very big part of this epidemic, because the more we learn, the more we educate, the more we build skills, the better off folks will be to resisting engaging.
Not have the problem in the first place. Yeah,
exactly. We also provide treatment for folks. Treatment does work. We know that it takes somebody addicted to opiates takes about 2 years for the brain to start to heal.
Wow, that's a long time.
So we do have significant brain changes, and so we have to kind of address those, help the individual think both behaviorally, physical health, and those kinds of things. So we are looking at integrating some of the behavioral health services that we have with our primary care physicians, educating those clinics, working directly with the patients that go to the clinics, having social workers and the like, peers at primary care, so that we can partner and kind of wrap around folks.
I think when we talked before, you mentioned working with hospitals too. Mm-hmm. Overdose patients would go to the hospital or looking for more drugs, get it, or go to the next emergency room. They would just kind of make the circuit.
Yeah, so some of the policy changes that have occurred in the emergency departments, one of the values of us getting together, so we've gotten together in the community to kind of just talk about this, and one of the values is having our two healthcare systems emergency department directors at the table, because once they started talking to each other, they realized if somebody was drug seeking at one emergency room and that the policy was, no, we're not going to prescribe you medication, then that person would just run down the street to the next emergency room.
So everybody else they could get it, yeah.
Yeah, so we've kind of gotten folks to change their policies together. So we're presenting a united front.
That's good. I was actually in urgent care with my son a couple months ago. He had got a punctured lung. It's a long story. As I was waiting with him to see the doctor, I noticed that there was a sign on the wall about opioids and pain, and saying, you know, we're careful about prescribing it. It's meant for immediate pain. We'll only prescribe it if it's really necessary. Just a whole warning thing.
Yes.
And I actually thanked the doctor for putting that up there. I really appreciated them, you know, taking that stance on the medication, not just prescribing them, you know,
right,
for anything, everything, and not right, not making people aware of the consequences.
Right. And that's part of that has become a practice as a result of this epidemic. But there's also been law changes, FDA prescribing practices. The CDC has changed their guidelines. It's really sort of thank God it's coming together now.
Right, and don't we now have it in Michigan? We have a database system that doctors are supposed to be using.
Yes, it's the Michigan Prescription Database, which is the automated prescription service. That's what it is, MAPS. And what that does is anytime a prescription is filled, the pharmacist enters it into the system. So you could track by patient how many times have they had a particular medication filled. You could track by doctor how many times are they prescribing these kinds of medications. You can look at pharmacies. Are there pharmacies that that you're seeing a lot of this activity going on? So there's a way to kind of monitor it. And it is a tool for a physician when you are prescribing something for an individual to look up on the system and see, what have they got in there
last
in the
week,
last
he was
week?
At Dr. X trying to get the same thing. Yeah.
Exactly. And we do know that there's a fair amount of folks out there that are looking, getting medication for, not for, for themselves, but to actually sell the medication. So there's this way through the MAPS program, we can monitor illegal sort of activities. And that's where we can see, like, for example, that there are prescribers, physicians, we call them pill mills.
Ah, yes.
And there have been several that, that have been closed down. So these are physician offices that their primary objective is to sell.
Sell pills. So whoever wants them needs them.
Yeah. And they basically charge, you know, cash. So it's not going on some Medicaid or
on somebody's Blue insurance. Cross. Yeah, a little harder
right.
to track.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. And that's another point is the insurance companies are also very vigilant about monitoring the prescribing practices of the doctors that they contract with, as well as patients. And if they notice something in their research when they look at the prescribing practices, they are able to intervene with those individuals and suggest treatment for some of those folks. So it's really is taking, I hate to use the term, but it's taking a village for everybody
right.
to come together to
a really
sort of,
multifaceted approach.
Yes,
yeah.
For all of us to really sort of be aware of this and pitch in and help.
So, just to wrap this up here, what would you say is maybe the most important thing that local governments can do to get their arms around this problem?
Well, I think it's first and foremost to have an understanding of the epidemic, that it is not just the impoverished communities, that it is an impacting the entire population, to be able to support our law enforcement folks in doing the first responder work, to work to support the hospitals who are managing overdoses, to understand that we are trying on the treatment side to engage folks and help them think about getting into treatment and sustaining their treatment and hopefully recovery. We also want to make sure that our schools have the appropriate education and information. We want to have prevention efforts across the board. Businesses, educate our businesses in the community. Nobody is immune to the epidemic. And even for us, we are what we would welcome going to businesses and training folks on how to administer the life-saving drugs that we have available to us. So we want to hit this from all levels. So it is really a community-wide effort. And I think the first and foremost is that we understand who we're dealing with and why this has happened. So,
yeah, people have gotten addicted without knowing where or why that was happening. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining me, Marcy. As I mentioned, the story on Marcy and the opioid epidemic is in the March-April issue 2018 of the Review, and that's available online at mml.org. Thank you again for joining us, Marcy. We'll see you all next time.
Okay, thanks.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.